Great. That's green. That's green.
We're good.
Welcome to Tuesday.
It's been a long Tuesday.
It's been a long Tuesday. So balancing individual and shared goals.
This is a hard one.
It's a hard one.
Because I'm not good at coming up with like individual goals. Mm-hmm. Never mind shared goals.
And I have things I want to accomplish, but I think through all my own personal discipline issues, I can't. But then I think I have some fear or some
hesitancy
that I don't want to be going for things because you have to be, you know, watch the kids so much and stuff. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have that fear. I kind of go, oh, great, Joel can watch the kids. But maybe it's because I'm home with them so much.
Right.
Like if it was the other way around, I'm sure we would have the same, you know, we would have opposite mentality about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe we could talk about personal growth because I think we are very much the same people that we were when we got married.
Mm-hmm.
And very different.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the personal growth, I think, has been forced upon us.
Yeah.
And not conquered.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it wasn't like self-driven. It was like we were pushed in that direction.
Yeah. Can we talk about Dwayne?
Yeah.
That was a lot of personal growth for me. Yeah. Where, you know, we sort of come to some sort of messed up rental arrangement with your uncle. Where we can all rent the same house together and different suites and all this kind of stuff. Just for him to do what an addict does. And it's not really his fault, mm-hmm. I guess. It is kind of, but like he just fell.
It's a mental illness, right?
Yeah. He just like really fell into his addiction. And that was really hard for us. But I sort of had to follow your mom's lead and become the bad guy. But that was
like a whole new role for you.
It was a lot of like conflict.
Yeah.
And
for being a peacekeeper. Anyways.
Yeah. Like, I had to learn how to like do rental inspections and, mm-hmm. you know.
You got like a small taste of landlord life.
Yeah. Ask like a 55-year-old man to like pay his rent on time and kick out his like homeless
freeloader
buddies.
Yeah.
And all this kind of crazy stuff. But the story I tell myself is that I grew up being the nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to be strong in that moment, or strong enough for that moment, mm-hmm. I guess. Which I think is better than being a strong guy who has to learn to be nice. Yeah, learning to be strong. And I think at that time we had 2 kids going on 3.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was super pregnant with Jude.
Man, I was still such a kid, you know? I've always struggled with some, like, naivety.
Mm-hmm.
But that really opened your eyes. Opened my eyes quite a bit. Like,
that house was like a boot camp in dealing with a lot of hard people, because the other suite was also very toxic.
Yeah. What was her name again?
Shannon.
Dude.
And she was another alcoholic and a druggie and sex addict.
Yeah, that was nuts.
She had it out for me.
Dude, some of that stuff was just like Hollywood level crazy.
Yeah, it was like stuff that you would only expect to see in a movie.
Like, and I feel so bad because we worked so hard to get Dwayne gone and to get Shannon out.
Yeah.
And then only to find out the only other normal person in that fourplex like turned on my brother.
I know.
So angry.
Yeah.
Like,
we tried so hard to make it a peaceful home for them.
Yeah.
But it is. But I don't know. Maybe that house is just cursed.
Well, like, that is one of the experiences in my life that makes me question how much that's a real thing.
Well, I remember going around and I think you did it with me, anointing the doors and the windows.
Right.
And just praying over it, because it was just like, there's a lot of crazy in this house right now. And somehow it always comes back on us.
Yeah.
And somehow always ends up being our responsibility. And we were the ones who were at the most risk of like our home was the common space with laundry and stuff. So it was like that wasn't even supposed to be a thing.
I know.
And then it became a thing, and then it was, I was honestly scared because it's like these people could, if we forget to lock the door, could literally walk into our house at any time.
Yeah.
And they felt like they owned it.
It's not nuts. But yeah, I think that was a time in my life where we were forced to grow. Me especially, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had to not be a boy about things.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But it ended up for the better, right?
In the end, yeah. I think we grew a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first time I'd ever really dealt with, like, severe anxiety attacks, I think. Like, locking myself in the closet, trying to breathe.
Crazy.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a hard parenting season, too, because we had the two little girls, and Abby was sick, and we didn't know it yet.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot going on with that. Expecting our third. And then trying to navigate how to model well. Dealing with crazy people, because they were home when all of that went down.
I know.
And like they were there listening to me being yelled at, and you know, Dwayne having his violent hissy fits downstairs. It was interesting learning how to navigate that and feeling confident in situations. Like, it is perfectly acceptable to call the police.
Anyway, raising two girls, Abby was sick.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't quite know it, and it's proper and acceptable to have to call the police on other people's bad behavior.
Yeah, because I struggled with feeling like a burden or like an unnecessary emergency, you know, like, oh, there's people with bigger emergencies, I don't want to tie up the line.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And it was a high-risk pregnancy, which was like, I think we knew it was high risk, but we didn't realize just how high risk until the day he was born. And it was just like all that stress that piled up, all the high conflict situations just kind of unfolded.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this was dumb.
I think we've had a lot of those moments where it's like, we could try this crazy thing. And then either it's like, wow, what a great decision, or, oh, this was dumb.
I think we come out of a lot of seasons, and like, it's just our life. And so I don't think much about it. Like, oh yeah, no, this happened and this happened. And then when I talk to people about it, they're like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't realize how much it can be until you hear, like, you see it through someone else's eyes and you're like, oh yeah, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We went through a lot in that season. But I feel like every season has kind of been like that. We haven't really had a chill season.
I know, we sort of...
It's almost like we get too bored.
Yeah.
Like, life starts to level out, and we're like, okay, we gotta shake it up a little bit. More so me than you. You get comfortable.
Yeah, well, I don't... I mean, I'm always willing to take on another project or something, mm-hmm. too. So maybe I'm not willing to, like, move up and down a house 10 times.
Yeah.
But I'm really willing to, like, tear apart an office or,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially at work. I feel like I just move from project to project without.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where I need to grow personally. We're talking about how we've managed personal growth, but also how we need to personally grow, because I need to move from being sort of this, like, serial starter of things and ideas into, like, project.
Follow through,
completion,
yeah.
Review. Okay, what did I learn? Move on to the next thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy to try things. There's not much I could be dissuaded from. Once someone, like, tells me about an idea or I get an idea into my head, there's not much between me hearing about something and trying it.
Yeah.
Right? But jack of all trades, master of none.
Classic ADHD.
Classic ADHD. Thank you, TikTok. I think shared dreams. I think we have maybe more in common with shared dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially.
If I'm honest, though, I don't really know what our shared dreams are right now. No, because, like, we've had seasons where it's been like, we want financial freedom, and this is how we want to get to it. And, you know, like, we'll go on walks and talk about how we're going to get there. And, like, that's our shared dream, is getting there. We've yet to see that. That come to fruition.
Something we started but didn't finish.
Something we were very passionate about in the beginning and burn out quickly. It's a interesting season. Like, even our Princeton season, you know, it was a shared vision to, like, launch the church and, like, right. do it well and get the building up and running. And then it was, you know, to get our family home to Surrey to connect with family. And, you know, like, I'm not really sure what our shared dream is right now.
It's a good question.
I feel like a little bit in, like, a, like, our last big thing was we got to get out of the province and live somewhere that's, we can have a more sustainable lifestyle.
Right.
And it was family time. And, like, that was, like, our big goal. And I feel like we're achieving that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we're working towards and trying to achieve. But beyond that, I don't know.
It's a good question. I think that's why we're sort of in a state now where we have conversations about what the future could look like.
Yeah.
Because I think we're figuring out what the next thing is, right?
I think we're also in a season where, just with our ages, this is generally when people start to kind of figure themselves out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what they like, what they don't like.
Yeah.
What they're unapologetically attached to.
Yeah.
Or, you know, striving for.
Yeah. I think, like, in my 20s, I really could have gone either way career-wise. I always struggle with my R's sometimes.
That's where Jude gets it from.
Career-wise. Where I could have done construction for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Or cabinet building. I could have gotten better and done sales, right? Like, mm-hmm. that people-to-people connection. And then if someone had given me a ministry chance earlier, I probably would have gone all in, right? Because mm-hmm. I went all in without getting a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a fair chance, you know? And
you made your opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. I could have gone a lot of different directions with my career. Whereas, like, now, I'm pretty certain I don't want to do sales.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty certain I don't want to be swinging a hammer. I'm pretty sure I want to do people-to-people work where it's about real things.
Hmm.
Does not necessarily mean church work or parachurch work or ministry work. But, like, I think the reason why I fell for MLMs was because it's like, man, I get to, like, work with people and help them to achieve things. And, you know, and then it's like, oh, but, you know, sell this insurance thing and it'll solve all their problems or whatever, which is, you know, solving problems is great and sales is really important, but I confused a sales job for, like, a people-to-people development job,
relationship building,
right.
I actually probably had more harm
in
relationships than anything.
And it might be a people-to-people development job, like, at the top, or, like, many years in when you have a big team.
And because you're building a team.
Yeah, of salespeople.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, I get to do a lot of the work that I think I was made to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, and then I sort of struggle with all the other stuff, like, organizing your seats or, you know, all that other crap. But I like
the administrative.
I like helping set a trajectory, and I like helping find footing and identity for an organization, and helping people find that for themselves. And so if I'm taking where I'm at and what goals I want to make for the future, I sort of want more of that. I think this is part of that too. When I worked at Apex, there's this one guy who was really good at, like, coaching and really good at, like, developing people. But he worked, I don't know, whatever it was, halftime or something. And the only thing he did was just, like, talk to people and help them develop sales and all that kind of stuff. But for me, again, I don't want to be like, let's make you the best you so you can sell 20 cell phones this month or whatever. It's like, let's make you the best you so that you and your family are set up. That's
so you thrive in life.
Yeah. You know? And not, like, it's important to be good at business. It's important to be good
at trades. Everyone needs a job.
You know, but I think for me, and I think a little bit for us, a process of like finding ourselves and growth and setting goals for the future is sort of like, we'll try this super crazy random thing because it offers something that we're wanting in that season.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then we go through it and we fail or whatever. And then we realize it's like, oh man, we really love family unity, or mm-hmm. man, we really love whatever it is. Like through all the different jobs and random things that I've had, some of them have offered something that it's like, oh, I want whatever I end up doing in my life to have a piece of this in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like you've picked up different puzzle pieces.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're just getting closer to filling out the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it's a 10-piece puzzle and not a 35-piece puzzle or a 1,000-piece puzzle, you know?
Yeah, it could get tricky. It's a lot of training ground.
And then how much of that is like, where's your character and where's your maturity levels and things like that? Because if you can never settle,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's a character flaw and yeah. not just picking up pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's just been a lot of change, like in our whole journey so far in our relationship. A lot of different jobs, a lot of different opportunities, and all of them seem to have kind of just been for a season. But like you said, like you pick up little pieces here and there that you like. But I think it always comes back to people and building relationships with people. And like that tends to be what we are attracted to most.
Yeah, I think so. So this is why we should join this MLM I heard of.
No. The what?
I'm just kidding.
No. I think I'm done.
I think I'm done too. Yeah.
I'm done.
I mean, honestly, good on us for not putting our noses up at that stuff.
No, I think a lot of character development happened. Because just even in the ones that I was in, I went into it looking for something that would build up my own confidence, which is what I found.
Yeah.
You know, I was in that season of two little kids and just not feeling like myself anymore. It's not the devil that people make it out to be.
No.
You know, like there is some good to it. And we did make some money at it.
Yeah.
You know,
if you think it's going to solve all your problems and it doesn't, then it is the devil. But
well, it's the love of the idea.
Yeah.
Of the money that you can get from it. I think that makes it out to be the bad guy.
And really, the only thing that will change your life is Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like, for us, yeah. for anybody to think otherwise, I think is just, you're always going to be left
wanting.
Church. Mm-hmm. If you think church is going to solve all your problems. If you think your marriage is going to solve all your problems.
Think a baby is going to solve all your problems.
Yeah. If you think a business opportunity or a whatever. And I think through it all, highs and lows, you and I have had that in common. And then when we didn't, like either I or you tried to put our hope into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm guilty of like wanting romantic affirmation.
Mm.
Right? Like I always want romantic affirmation because I still feel lost.
Mm-hmm.
From being 6 years old and feeling lost, and you know, it's never left me. But when I think that, well, if Lana and I can figure this one thing out, my life will be better. Yeah, when we solve problems together, my life is better, but it's not ever really going to address lifelong wounds or, mm-hmm. or really the only
root issues.
You know, the only thing that can heal that is Jesus, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think we're in a season of establishing shared dreams again.
I think we're also in a season of kind of solidifying who we are as individuals and as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and as a couple of individuals.
And as a couple of individuals, yeah. there's been a lot of crashing and burning and thriving, you know, over the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, a lot of those shared dreams or whatever, we're kind of a little bit aloof or unrealistic. But we also just didn't know what we wanted out of life. And now that we're starting to kind of find the foundation of who we are and just the things that make us tick and make us tick together, you know, or work or whatever. Yeah, it's just, it's interesting.
Yeah. I think it's just because we have a lot more of the puzzle pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding out that your puzzle pieces and my puzzle pieces can actually go together.
They're not so different.
They're not so different. Yeah.
But I think it's because we started at opposite ends of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Like we were both striving for that middle.
Mm-hmm. And only finding edge
pieces. And now we can kind of see each other across the pond.
That's funny. Yeah. Okay. The one last point is mutual support. Encouraging each other's ambitions without feeling competitive or neglected. The other big N word, neglected.
Yeah, the hot one.
Yeah. So there's a few instances that come to mind when I think about this. For me, chasing the kind of work that I think will be fulfilling. As much as you didn't want to be a pastor's wife and don't want to be a pastor's wife and don't want to be a ministry wife, your actions have sort of said otherwise. Like you're willing to let me try and fail quite a few times.
I think, like looking back at it, it's not the job or the lifestyle that I'm scared of. It's the expectation of that kind of comes along with ministry work of you will live in poverty, you know?
It's a good thing we've never been there.
Just the annual food hampers.
Oh, God.
I think that was my biggest fear. And just through the years, just with us trying to grind out not relying on ministry work and trying to do other work and still landing up in that area of, you know, in a sense, poverty, because we're a paycheck to paycheck, sometimes already spent the next paycheck before we get the next paycheck, you know, like,
yeah.
And just on essentials, not even foolishly. I think I've come around to it more just because I realized that's not necessarily what it's attached to. You know, like there is a lot of joy and fulfillment that comes in ministry because it's relationships with people, which I think is a huge thing for us. And
I think as a couple, but also individually.
Mm-hmm. But like in completely different ways too, though. Like you're super social and outgoing. And I'm just not.
I could say the same thing for you, though, that you're super social and outgoing and I'm not.
It's almost like conditional, though. Like,
yeah.
Like, stick me in a room full of people I don't know and I actually want to shrivel up and die.
Yeah.
But put me in a place where I know a lot of the people and I'm comfortable with them and then I'll be a social butterfly.
Right.
And, you know, be my stupid happy self.
Yeah.
But when it's like an uncomfortable situation, I'm not good being out of my comfort zone. I really struggle with that.
Yeah. I think for me, it's also, if I have a personal objective in a room full of strangers, I can make friends.
Mm.
But if I'm just put in a waiting room, I am freaking out, you know? And that's why I think I have a hard time running the drop-in center.
Mm.
Because it's like, oh, well, I want to be relationally connected to these teens.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, you know, was never really my big thing growing up for an objective of like, man, your life is so much better once you know Jesus. Your life is so much better if you're not skipping class. Your life is so much better if you're, you know, not doing drugs. But they don't want to talk to me. And so it's like,
because you're the authority figure.
And so I just find myself like awkwardly just sort of
flitting around.
Yeah. Going like this a lot,
you know?
And I've had to learn to be that awkward and just like deal with it and just be okay being awkward. Another part of my job, like when I go to meet a bunch of other people who do the same work as me, somebody said that I'm becoming known as a networker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, nah, like I'm not a networker, but because there's a shared objective, a
common ground.
Yeah. And frankly, living in the middle of nowhere, Manitoba, it's so nice to meet other people who have the same objectives. But yeah, even in those social circles, my extrovertedness sort of has put some people off me.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm really not that guy.
But like, I think also because it just, the pressure builds up to be that more extrovertedness because we're so isolated here.
Yeah.
And so meeting new people.
Yeah.
It's like, woo.
We're like, even at church on Sunday, like I'm not like my mom. Like my mom will find anybody in any lobby anywhere.
Your mom hunts people down and it's like, I will make you feel loved.
Right. And can talk about anything. I don't have a reason to expect that person wants to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to meet them.
I have to have a common ground. Until I find something that I have in common with you, I'm that like stumbling fool.
Right.
Who like just can't find their words and then is like replaying over and over and over in my brain of like, why did you say I'm good, thanks, instead of hi, how are you? You know, like I mix up my phrases and I,
right.
You know, that kind of stuff. But until I have something common with you, then I can open up more because then I have a subject that I can tap into. But then that's going to be like the main subject that I talk to you about until you introduce something else. Because that's just, I don't know how to connect otherwise.
Yeah.
But I think that's why so many of my like really close friends are so extroverted. Because they hunted me down. And they were like, you will be my friends. And we will talk. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, people who aren't scared of the shy, awkward stages.
Yeah. Well, I think we learned to describe it this year. Like, you are an extroverted introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm do I have that backwards? You're an introverted extrovert. Yeah, you're an introverted extrovert, and I'm an extroverted introvert, where actually it's a lot of work for me to meet a lot of people. And so when I know that there's going to be like a payoff, like I understand that person has a similar objective as me, I can do the work.
Mm.
And it's actually, there's joy in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I maintain health through like quiet family time or, you know,
just peace.
Working on my own peace is really important, right? Doesn't necessarily mean I'm hunkered by myself, you know, in a room reading.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it does mean that. But but it's just, I need to find that quiet peace where I think you are more...
I struggle with that. I don't know what to do with myself when it's just me.
Yeah.
But then I get so overwhelmed in crowds.
Yeah.
And like when we first started dating... I would get so overwhelmed going over to your family's house because there were so many people.
Yeah.
And I'd never...
Too many people.
There was too many people. Well, because there was your whole family, which is huge. Yeah. And then there was like all of the unofficially adopted kids and the friends that they brought home. And, you know, like...
In-laws.
And then kids. And like, it was just a lot of people always at the house. And we were there a lot. And it wasn't a bad thing, but it was just like, I didn't know what to do with myself because I came from a quieter home. And I was used to being the chaotic one.
Right.
So then to not be that and then, you know, be thrown in the middle of it. I think I often went. I don't watch sports, but I would go and sit and watch golf with your dad because it was like, I need peace.
Yeah. Downstairs in the basement.
Yeah.
That's funny.
We, you know, just sit there and, you know, talk every once in a while. But it was just like this mutual understanding of like, we need peace.
Yeah.
And then I'd go and join because I'd miss out on, like, you know, epic FOMO. I want to know what's going on and I want to be a part of it, but I don't necessarily want to be in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
interesting.
Yeah. But even if I know that there's events going on, like mom's meetups or whatever, I want to go because I want to see people.
Right.
But then once I'm there, I'm like super awkward.
Yeah.
I just want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's like the superficial level needs a little bit of growth, right? Where it's like, these are the things that I know I can say to a stranger to get them to connect with me because I want that connection.
Yeah.
Me, it's the character growth where it's like, oh, I actually need to think good of that stranger and understand that they are not a negative person and that actually we could have some things in common. And, you know, and it's, I have all the tools to find that common ground. I just have a bias against other people. Right. Where I think you have the heart for other people, but you don't necessarily have,
all the tools.
Yeah.
Which is interesting though, because I feel like I've just lost a lot of it. I think I built up a lot of that when I was working because my job was connecting with people and like making them feel comfortable. But like hairstylist me and like everyday me are two totally different people. But I think is why I would come home so exhausted at the end of the day. And not just because it was physically demanding, but it was because I was like, I was peopling.
Yeah.
Which is so out of my wheelhouse. But I could get people talking. But stick me at church or in a parking lot or anywhere else, like I cannot tap into that same person.
That's funny.
But stick someone in a chair in front of me and I'll get them talking.
Okay. I think we need to tackle it. The feeling of neglect or...
Competitive.
Yeah. I don't think I've really struggled with feeling competitive with you.
No.
Certainly, I think we've both felt neglect. And I think,
Yeah, I definitely don't think I felt competitive. Like, if anything, the only area that would come into play, I think, is, like, in our roles as parents. You know, and it's not even a competitive thing. It's just like a, you get more time doing this and, you know, I want more time doing that or whatever. You know, it's just like the bumps of figuring out parenthood and life outside of parenthood.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But I don't think it's ever been competitive because more often than not, we've always worked as a team. And maybe competitive against other people because we're a team.
And it's not necessarily keeping up with other people. It's at least it's not as bad as that.
That makes me feel better about this.
Yeah. I know I'm a loser, but that seems to be a much bigger loser situation happening.
I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now. Point.
Point. That's funny. But neglect.
Yeah, I think we've both struggled with our own neglect and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah. Is there a time, maybe, no, I'm not going to give you any hints. Is there a time that you felt neglected that you think would be good to talk about?
A time?
Is there a set of 12 years?
No.
I think... In regards to goals, dreams, visions, plans, personal growth.
I think there's like a collection of seasons where neglect isn't, I don't know if that really feels like the right word for it. But like the first thing that kind of pops to mind is there have been a collection of seasons where I think I thought we were on the same track and it turned out we weren't. And I felt kind of left in the dust. Or I felt like I was still striving for something that we like talked about and maybe you just kind of moved on. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I don't quite.
I'm just.
Yeah.
I'm getting there.
Okay. Come on. Give me the.
I'm a verbal processor, right?
Give me the meat and potatoes.
Just like I'm very much an actions person and you're very much a dreamer and a words person. And so I think I struggled with that because I want to see the action and I want to see the follow through with things. And when I don't see action or follow through, I feel like, you know, the dream or whatever has been kind of pushed aside and neglected. And I think that's probably been one of my biggest struggles in regards to like feeling neglected. Is not seeing a lot of follow through with like promises or, you know, expectations, which then makes you feel or, you know, leads to you feeling kind of left in the dust, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. because I'm such a actions person.
Right.
You know, which I think is why I move quickly on, like, we make a decision and I'm like, done, let's do it. Because that's just how I process and how I move forward with things, right? If I don't see it happening, it's not going to happen. And so that's just in my own processing. Like, I know you express things differently because you're not as much of an actions person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really get what you're saying. And I think we're sort of bookending to the beginning of our conversation where it's easy for me to move on to new ideas. It's easier for me to move on to new ideas than it is to sort of do the grunt work to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, we all have flaws. I think that's, you know, certainly a flaw. But yeah, certainly never intentionally neglecting you, right?
No, I know.
But I think I move on quickly because we're not getting into specifics.
No.
And I don't know why. It's hard for me to know exactly what you're talking about sometimes.
Well, just even like financial goals or, you know.
Right. I think I move on because I think it's discouragement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I realize things are just, I think I'm just out of resources to complete the goal. So why am I putting more effort towards it if I'm out of resources to attain that goal, you know, or opportunities or whatever? Like if I'm at an income locked job, for instance.
Yeah.
Or like, or if I, you know, MLMs or sales jobs, like I think I'm bumping up against some like things I just don't want to cross in personal relationships, which is not a bad thing that some people do want to cross those.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone has to do their own thing. I don't know. I don't think it's bad. I think one of us needs to be a hoper and a dreamer because otherwise we're just going to get stuck real bad all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like,
no, it's not necessarily like a fault. It's just like a observation of,
right,
like these are our differences. And, you know, in hopers and dreamers, they have grand ideas and generally it kind of pumps up as like big promises, you know, like one day we're going to get to this and we're going to get to that. And for me, where I tend to be more of a realist in that regard, like,
and or, negative.
Well, I'm a refiner, but I don't try. I think I used to be a hoper and a dreamer, and then like reality just kind of bumped me down a few notches, you know?
Don't you hate saying that?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like, I don't like setting myself up for disappointment. I think there's a lot of areas of my life where disappointment was just expected. It's like with family or, you know, relationships in that regard. And so I don't like putting myself in the uncomfortable situation of potentially setting myself up for disappointment.
Right.
Which is why I struggle with, like, you know, in 5 years, my plan is we'll get, you know, this amount of money saved and we're going to get into our own house. Meanwhile, in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, let's be realistic, though. We're never going to get there, you know, like bumping myself down so that I don't get my hopes up to get crashed even further later.
Yeah.
You know? Because if I don't see the action following, like, soon after and consistently, then I crash even harder.
Yeah.
Of, like, I start to spiral.
Interesting. Because I think some of the neglect I feel has been the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I'm trying to get you excited about something.
Yeah.
And you're not.
Yeah.
And then it loses value in my mind. And it sort of feels like you're always testing me a little bit, where it's like, okay, well, we'll see. And it's like, no, like, we'll see together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe we can make it work together.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not, you know, like, we'll have a hopeful conversation. And then I can sort of feel the atmosphere shift around you. And that takes the wind out of my sails, like, completely.
I guess because I'm mentally processing everything that we just talked about. and like weighing out the sword, like the realities of it.
Right.
Like, what's the reality that this will happen? Or, you know, like I.
But maybe the reality is just what can come if we both could stay excited about something.
Yeah, it's definitely a character flaw for me.
Yeah. Like, even this, I sort of wait for the shoe to drop where it's like, you're just not interested in it anymore. Hmm. And it's like, oh.
No, I'm definitely interested. I've just been sick. Like, it's hard for me to get excited about talking at nighttime when I'm, like, hacking up along.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm also just irritated that I'm still sick.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
So it's just, it's not to do with this at all. It's just... I'm just not feeling life right now.
Yeah. Well.
Was that productive or was that, did it leave you with more questions?
I think I learned through our Princeton experience that I hate feeling uncomfortable and then just telling a good story to like put a band-aid on the uncomfortable feeling. Like narrative bow tying. It's like, hey, let's present this big giant problem, but oh, so-and-so said they liked this. Let's tie a nice little bow on it and say it's good.
And I think that's to do with everything from that season, not just...
Yeah. No, it's not necessarily one person or the other. I just...
Yeah.
It was a theme in my life where I was like, oh, I don't actually want to hear a good story right now. Mm-hmm. I want to understand why this sucks so bad.
Mm-hmm. And, transparency.
Yeah. And I think we don't have to leave... on like a super happy, jolly note, mm-hmm. you know, it could just be like, yeah, sometimes we both feel neglected and I love you.
Yeah.
And let's feel neglected less and together more.
Mm-hmm. But we're also like, sometimes it takes us longer to process things too. Right. So it's like,
yeah,
you're not going to get everything sorted and figured out and balanced out.
Yeah.
In a short amount of time, sometimes it's just good to have that revelation of, oh, this is a thing, or, oh, now it all makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're sort of going into these conversations blind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have some talking points, but I think it's important for us to be transparent in our sort of rediscovery
mm-hmm.
in 12 years of marriage of, you know, what are some of these things, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think something that we've come to realize more and more, just like with more people that we talk to, is just how that's just a non-factor in a lot of relationships.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they shatter and fall apart and you find out that so much of it is just like a lack of communication.
Yeah.
And we can't afford to have a therapist, but hey, we can afford to do this.
Well, yeah, I don't know anything about therapy. But I know that a good conversation can be medicine for the soul.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just need to hear yourself speak to realize like, yeah. Oh, I really do feel that. Or is that honest? Like, is that actually what the problem is? That doesn't feel like that's what the problem is.
Yeah.
You know.
And we had someone talk to us about, I know you don't remember this at all,
mm-hmm.
but talk to us about being transparent.
I remember certain like aspects,
yeah.
but not that whole, yeah.
About being transparent.
And sharing our story.
And really not, I don't know if a lot of people do share their story.
I think, because like I struggle with this too. Like, it's just such a common problem to want to put up a good front.
Right.
And, you know, previous generations, they just didn't talk about their problems. And they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
They just didn't invite people into that part of their lives. And so they had no idea that their best friend was struggling with the same thing that they were struggling with.
Right.
Or, you know, and then find out decades later that they could have leaned on each other. And I think it's, yeah, I think it's just important for people to see that it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but that there's a path through. And, you know, people connect with that, I think.
Yeah.
So, authenticity.
Yeah, I think in order for us to actually be real and for if people listen to this,
mm-hmm.
for them to hear us being real.
It's going to take a lot of humbling.
But also we don't have to, we can get to the end of our talking points and realize that we both kind of suck.
Yeah.
And it's okay because we choose to love each other and, you know, we'll go to sleep and tomorrow will be another day with more fighting with our kids and trying to get them to obey us.
But, or work with us. But I think it's also, there's something like deep down inside us that's like, it's attractive when people just speak with honesty.
Yeah.
You know, people are attracted to those who are just open.
Yeah.
And generally shy away from those who just kind of put up a facade kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's, I don't know, for some people it might be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because people are comfortable with what they know. But I definitely don't think it's going to make us, like, despise each other.
No. I think it's actually going to be really good.
Well, it helps you understand the other person so much more, too, right?
Yeah, cool. All right.
It's a wrap.